Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Visitor and Convention Bureau's weekly Hurricane Ian Tourism Industry Conference Call. My name is Brian Ososki. I am the Marketing Director for the Visitor and Convention Bureau. 148 days, I believe, today since Hurricane Ian. Nearly 5 months. Hard to believe. So thank you all for joining us today. Our Executive Director, Tamara Pigott, could not join today because she is giving a presentation this morning, and Commissioner Brian Hammond is with the media this morning, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that here in just a little bit. But we have a couple of great guests for you lined up today. First up is Dana Brunette. He is the Lee County Economic Development Office Deputy Director. Dana, are you on the line this morning? You'll need to hit *2 to unmute your line.
Yeah, I'm here, Brian. Thank you.
Super. You're coming through loud and clear, Dana.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. As Brian indicated, I'm Dana Brunette with the Economic Development Office here in Lee County. And I'm here to talk to you today a little bit about what we call the BRE program, which stands for Business Recruitment and Expansion, or Business Retention and Expansion in its literal sense. We're government. We love our acronyms, so we just call it BRE. And what it means is we go out and visit with businesses all throughout the county to kind of get a pulse on, you know, how things are going for them, impacts. You know, we do this in normal times on a regular basis, but we've stepped it up during the post-disaster time frame because we want to make sure we get to anybody who needs to talk to us, get some assistance, find out about programs. So what we've done is we now have 5 people in our office who are actively entertaining BREs with businesses, and we've had a large focus on the heavily impacted areas of the beaches and the barrier islands. So, you know, we will be reaching out to you to talk to you because we want to find out, you know, if you're operating, if not, when do you expect, what kind of obstacles are you facing, what kind of assistance are you looking for, and also to make you aware of some of the programs available out there that you may not know about to help you recover through this whole process. And there might be some new stuff coming down the pike as well for that, which is good news for all of us. But our intention is to kind of get our finger on the pulse of what's going on out there and to make sure you know that, you know, we want to help you guys and find ways to bring assistance to you as much as possible. Now, we'll be reaching out to different businesses as we go through a large business listing that we have, but we encourage you to reach out to our office. And you can reach out to me specifically, and we can get you my contact information, because as I run the program, I'll be able to assign visits to other staff. But we want to make sure if you have immediate needs and you want to meet with us that we get to you as quickly as possible. If you're fine with just us reaching out to you over time, then we will be doing that either be via phone or email. Excuse me. So the other thing I want to make sure is if you have not yet applied for an SBA disaster loan, please do so. You could do that online. You could do it at the disaster recovery centers, which are listed on the Lee County website, because it's going to close out at the end of this weekend unless we get news that it's going to be extended. We haven't heard anything yet, but if you get an application in the pipeline before that date, then you can go back and fix it if it's insufficient. So my suggestion to you is if you are in need of an SBA disaster loan to get your application in, so at least you can go back and modify it as needed if it's rejected. The other thing too is the SBA economic injury loans are still available. Those go through the end of the summer. Those are specifically for economic injury during or post-disaster. And basically, you can use the proceeds for working capital, you know, things like continuation of healthcare benefits, rent, utilities, and fixed debt payments. So that's a good program. And the thing is for this, you know, you can access a lot of money through this program. The interest rate will not exceed 4%, and the term will go out 30 years. So it's a great opportunity to get capital that you may need for your recovery and ongoing business operations. So please keep that in mind as well. That application is still open and will be for several months. So those are most of the things I wanted to hit on. But again, if you have an immediate need, we'll make sure that, Brian, hopefully I can, through you guys, put out my contact information so people can reach out to me directly and we can help them.
Absolutely, Dana. If anyone wants to speak with Dana or have questions about any of these programs, certainly just reach out to myself or anyone at the Visitor and Convention Bureau. We'll put you in touch with Dana. Dana, do you have some time to answer some questions if anybody has any questions for you?
Absolutely. I'll do my best.
All right. So if anybody has any questions for Dana about these programs, please hit *2 to unmute your phone and ask away. Sometimes folks are shy on the call, Dana, but if there's any follow-up by anyone, we'll be certain to pass that information along to you. And if you're able to stay with us for the length of the call, maybe someone will think of a question that they can ask you later on. How does that sound?
Yeah, no, I'll be glad to hold on. I'll just mute myself for now.
Super. Thanks, Dana. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
All right, next up, we are going to hear an update from the Sanibel Captiva Conservation Foundation CEO, Mr. James Evans. James, if you're on the line with us this morning, please hit *2 to unmute your phone.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Good morning, everyone. Can you all hear me?
Yep, you sound great, James. We can hear you.
Excellent. Thanks, Brian. So good morning, everyone, and I want to thank you all for joining me this asking me to join you this morning. You know, of course, as our communities continue to recover from Hurricane Ian, we continue to learn a lot about the impacts of the storm and what we need to do to make our communities more resilient. Of course, we can learn a lot from nature, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that this morning. And what I think that Hurricane Ian has really highlighted is the strong partnership that exists between the conservation community and our business community, and how important our natural resources are to our local economy. Of course, our natural resources were devastated by the storm, like many of our businesses, and our hearts certainly go out to all of the businesses that were impacted by the storm. Like many of you, SECF experienced significant losses, but we remain laser focused on recovery and creating opportunities as we move forward, like many of you. And again, our natural resources remain resilient and should stand as a beacon of hope for our communities as we rebuild. And my goal today is really to highlight the resiliency of our wildlife and natural systems. And I'm going to provide a quick update on our local wildlife and habitat with a focus on Sanibel and Captiva Islands. And I'm going to discuss our regional water quality and what we might expect over the next several months as we continue to recover from Hurricane Ian. And of course, you know, to add insult to injury, you know, the Coosawhatchee is attached to Lake Okeechobee, which, of course, we don't always have control over the releases from Lake Okeechobee. So I'll talk a little bit about that, where our water quality is, and what we might expect as we move into the spring and summer months. But first, I just want to start off with some of the physical impacts on our islands. Of course, you know, all of our barrier islands experience some degree of storm surge, but of course, Fort Myers Beach and Sanibel Island and Captiva Island, Mat Lachey, Pine Island, we all experience pretty significant storm surge. On Sanibel, you know, many areas experienced overwash, and we recorded about 11-foot storm surge on our recon sensors, which is our river estuary and coastal observing network. It's a network of real-time water quality monitoring sensors that our marine lab monitors throughout the Coosawhatchee and our coastal waters. And, you know, that was a pretty significant storm surge that we recorded in the water, but we also, you know, were able to record a wave height of about 24 feet from our wave buoy at Redfish Pass. So we know that we saw a significant surge, and of course, you know, many of the buildings on Sanibel and you know, our barrier islands were, you know, show that as a result. And, you know, with that came, you know, a lot of salt water that covered our islands. And one of the things that had a significant impact on our wildlife and our natural habitats was this almost immediate overnight shift from freshwater bodies on Sanibel and Captiva to saltwater bodies. Pre-storm on Sanibel, we had about 1,300 or so acres of interior freshwater wetlands, which means that those wetlands are predominantly freshwater, meaning that the salinity, the salt content in the water was less than 5 PSU. almost overnight, that salinity in many areas went from less than 5 to as high as 28 PSU, which is almost pure seawater. Pure seawater is about 35. So that had a significant change on the system, and there was a significant shift in the organisms that can live there. And that displaced a number of species. For example, you know, many of our freshwater fish species, like the game fish, like bass and our bluegill and many of our amphibians and freshwater plants and things like that could no longer exist in water bodies that went from freshwater to saltwater overnight. So we lost a number of those species. And we're also, you know, seeing some physical impacts where, you know, some of our species were actually transported, physically taken off the island and transported into our coastal waters or onto our adjacent, you know, the mainland or other barrier islands. In fact, our habitat management staff were able to recover a box turtle that washed off Sanibel and was recovered on Cape Coral, because we have many box turtles and other turtles that are marked. So if you guys see any marked wildlife out there and you need to find out where it came from, please give us a call. Our biologists can help out and try to identify some of those species. But some of the other physical impacts and biological impacts that occurred came from nutrient inputs. Of course, you know, a lot of water and surge came over the islands, and with it carried a lot of nutrients such as nitrogen, phosphorus, and other pollutants from our landscapes into the coastal waters, which contributed those nutrients to our coastal waters, then made those nutrients available to algae, whether it's red tide or blue-green algae, or some of the macroalgae species that grow in our waters that are indicators of nutrient enrichment. So we're starting to see that throughout our coastal waters, but we're also seeing that on Sanibel. Our nutrient concentrations spiked significantly right after the storm in many of our freshwater bodies throughout the islands. And of course, many of you probably saw the media reports, which, you know, certainly don't help the recovery of our businesses, you know, and the bacteria levels throughout our coastal waters. We have enterococci bacteria, which is an indicator of, you know, the health of our beaches, which is a general bacteria. But there's also some more specific ones like Vibrio vulnificus, which is the so-called flesh-eating bacteria that really spiked. The number of cases spiked right after the storm. And that's primarily because we saw a lot of runoff from septic and sewer and overflows and things like that that contributed those nutrients and bacteria to the coastal waters. We're starting to see, you know, some improvement, although the Florida Department of Health continues to have a standing precautionary advisory for all of Lee County beaches. This past week, I looked at the numbers of enterococci at some of our beaches, and most of them were all in the good range, except for Lighthouse Beach Park was in the poor range on February 13th, and then it was in the moderate range on the 15th. So we're starting to see some recovery. Bacteria levels are generally lower during the winter months when the water is colder and we're not seeing as much runoff. So we are starting to see some recovery of our water quality, but debris in the inland and coastal waters remains a significant concern, especially for beachgoers. And I know many of our communities working closely with Lee County and the state of Florida have been able to remove a lot of that debris. We've been working with the state and the county to do some raking of the beaches to remove some of that debris that might harm some of our beachgoers and visitors and residents. So I think we're making some progress there. And I'm just gonna go through a few of the wildlife reports. I mentioned earlier that our wildlife is resilient and we are starting to see a lot of the wildlife returning. We saw a return almost immediately right after the storm, and the city of Sanibel and SECF and Ding Darling and all of our partners on the islands were working to gather information on wildlife reports after the storm to find out what those impacts are, because this is really a grand experiment. We're kind of living through it and trying to document as much as we can and report as we go forward. But the good news is, when we look at some of the species that are really important economically here, sea turtles actually did very well. Prior to the storm, I believe we had about 786 nests on Sanibel and Captiva, mostly loggerhead with a few green sea turtles, but we only lost 17 nests. The good news is Hurricane Ian hit right at the end of our sea turtle nesting season. So most of the nests had hatched. In fact, we saw more impacts from no-name storms earlier in the season than we saw from Ian. So the timing was good, as good as it could be given the devastation. And then shorebirds, of course, shorebirds nests between mid-February and August. So we were out of shorebird nesting season, so we didn't see a significant impact on the shorebird nesting. But of course, it did have an impact on habitat. And actually, there are some silver linings that I'm going to report today. One of the silver linings is that it actually opened up some habitat for our shorebirds, areas that had been overgrown by sea grapes and other things that hinder the ability for shorebirds to nest, actually opened up some additional habitat throughout many of our areas on Sanibel and Captiva and some of our beaches in Lee County. So there could be some positive benefits to the storm as well for habitat. Many of our raptors, like our eagles and ospreys and swallowtail kites, are actually doing pretty well. Eagles in particular are probably the shining example of recovery and resilience. We monitor about 10 pair of bald eagles in the region. On Sanibel, we have five on Sanibel, three on Captiva, and we have a couple other in the region. And we've got some new nests. So, you know, I think the eagles are doing very well. We have two that just recently hatched on the Pushell Preserve, which was a preserve that we own that we allowed the contractor on Sanibel to use for a construction and demolition debris processing site. And the eagles did very well throughout construction of that site. So anyway, some good examples. Ospreys, on the other hand, which are monitored by the International Osprey Foundation, they're struggling to recover. Mostly because we lost a lot of the nesting platforms and we're just beginning the osprey nesting season. So any help that the business community can give us and our residents can give us in trying to get some nesting platforms up would be really helpful. But we're still, you know, seeing the osprey struggling to build nests and things like that post-storm. Swallowtail kites, we're just in the beginning of nesting season, but we expect that they'll probably be okay, although we've lost a lot of that canopy that they depend on. I'm just going to go down the list here. Most of the mammals we've been able to document that have returned to the islands, bobcats, otters, coyotes, raccoons, rabbits, all of our crocodilians, the alligators and crocodiles have been all reported on Sanibel and Captiva. Our terrestrial turtles, all of them have returned. And we've only have one native lizard that's been found, and that's the glass lizard. So we haven't seen a great recovery of the lizards. Many of the snake species have returned. But some of the species I just want to mention that we have not found on the islands following the storm, and if any of you have seen any on our islands, please let us know. But armadillos, possum, many species of frogs, aside from the southern toad, coach whip snakes, Florida brown snakes, things like that, we are not documenting. So if you guys are out and about and you see these organisms, please report that to SECF's wildlife reporting portal at secf.org. And then finally, I'm just going to touch real quickly on the water quality conditions related to Lake Okeechobee. And of course, SECF puts out a weekly Coosatchee conditions report, which is really geared towards our resource managers at the South Florida Water Management District, our water managers, and the Army Corps of Engineers and elected leaders. Many of you might already receive that report. But currently, lake levels are sitting right at about 15.68 feet, and that's higher than we would like to see at this time of year. Generally, we want to maintain the lake between 12.5 and 15.5 feet, so we're above that threshold right now, which means that as we move into the spring and summer, if we have a wetter spring or summer, it means that we're going to have excess water in the lake that needs to be discharged. And of course, many of you have all lived through the red tide blooms in the past, especially following the hurricane 2018, 2019. And we saw a significant red tide bloom that impacted our beaches and our local economy. And we're a little concerned that the lake levels right now are very similar to what we saw back in 2018. And if the Army Corps of Engineers doesn't work to reduce those lake levels prior to the spring, that we may see those nutrients and the water being discharged into our coastal waters. And of course, many of you already know that we're continuing to deal with a red tide bloom that is contributing to fish kills along our beaches. And of course, the red tide is adding insult to injury as we recover from Hurricane Ian. And we're seeing moderate and high concentrations from Sarasota all the way down to Collier County. And research that we conducted this past year with the University of Florida, we've been able to really link the nutrients that come off of our landscapes and the nutrients that are discharged from Lake Okeechobee that come down all the way from the Kissimmee into Lake Okeechobee into the Coosahatchee. We know that when we put excess nutrients into the coastal waters when there's an existing red tide bloom, that can exacerbate an existing red tide bloom. And we know that that contributed in 2018 to that super bloom that plagued our beaches. So we're very concerned. We continue to work very closely with the Army Corps of Engineers and the South Florida Water Management District and pushing them to lower lake levels, but doing it in a way that will not harm either the Coosahatchee or the St. Lucie. But we need to get those lake levels down and really pushing to try and send more of that water south into the Everglades agricultural area to use for water supply and send it south into the Everglades where it's desperately needed. So that's really where our focus is right now. Just trying to, push the Army Corps of Engineers to make good decisions so that we're not harmed, in addition to what we're already experiencing post Ian. And, we're continuing to monitor our seagrass beds and oyster reefs. Of course, they took a big hit during Ian as well with all of the colored dissolved organic matter that was discharged into our coastal waters. Our water clarity is starting to improve, but our seagrasses continue to decline. So that's habitat that supports our world-class fisheries and our tourism-based economy. So really important that you all be a voice for our natural resources. And as we continue to recover from Hurricane Ian, that we continue to push for protection of those natural resources and improving the quality of our beaches and trying to restore the Everglades so that we can move more of that water south and not have to deal with as much of it harming our coastal communities. So with that, I'll answer any other questions you might have.
Wow, James, thanks for such a thorough update. I know that all of our partners and folks on the line with us today really want to hear this information, so I appreciate the time. I'm going to kick this off. I have a couple of questions, and then I'll open it up to everyone else. First of all, you were talking about the eagles, and we've actually received some questions about Harriet. Have you heard anything about Harriet? I know that eagles are sort of nesting pairs, right? They're together for life, but I think she's still missing. Correct?
That's correct. Yeah, we have not received any reports of her being found anywhere. So yeah, still concerned about Harriet and not sure if she's going to show up. But like I mentioned earlier, the eagles are resilient and it seems like they are adapting to these changing conditions that followed Hurricane Ian. And we're actually seeing more nesting pairs on our islands than we saw prior to Hurricane Ian. So I think it's providing some opportunities. So there may be some silver linings out there.
All right. Well, that's good news. We'll keep our fingers crossed for her return. And you mentioned some of the work that you were doing with the University of Florida in terms of, the runoff and how it contributes to red tide and whatnot. I know that in 2005, we had a pretty bad red tide following Charlie, and then, of course, 2018 following Irma. And there's been a lot of talk about, of course, a huge red tide summer following Hurricane Ian. So is this something, just so that we can share information with folks that don't know everything about red tide, is it solely due to the runoff? No, because it's still a naturally occurring thing, right? And so, historically speaking, we've seen this in years following major hurricanes. So while the Army Corps of Engineers, if we are successful and get them to do releases over a longer period of time to keep those lake levels down, that doesn't necessarily mean that we won't see a red tide, correct?
Exactly, Brian. It's important to note that, red tide is a naturally occurring organism. It's a dinoflagellate that exists out in the Gulf of Mexico. It was here prior to the Spanish arriving, in the 1500s, and it's going to exist after, we're all gone. But what we're finding is that through this complex modeling that we've been able to do using artificial intelligence, and supercomputers to be able to crunch all of this data with the University of Florida, is that we now know that based on the data, that the runoff that comes from the landscape, whether it comes from the Coosahatchee watershed or whether it comes from the discharge from Lake Okeechobee, or it comes off of the runoff from our own barrier islands sitting out here in the Gulf of Mexico, we know that those nutrients when they're available in excess and red tide blooming, that red tide will take advantage of those nutrients, whether it's dead fish that are dying as a result of the red tide killing those dead fish, or it's nutrients that are running off the landscape from fertilizer. Red tide doesn't really care. It's not really a picky eater. So it's going to take up those nutrients and it's going to bloom. What we're concerned about is that, when we move into the summer, we get a lot of runoff anyway. It's just, the runoff that we can control, let's control it. And if we can control the discharge from Lake Okeechobee that we know can contribute and exacerbate those blooms, let's try and control it by doing these preemptive releases now, rather than, pumping a large amount of discharge and huge volumes of water that could blow those blooms up and make those super blooms that we saw in 2018. I think that's our real concern. It's not so much that, we could experience a red tide bloom all summer long, regardless of whether or not we receive discharge. It's just because of the nature of the rainy season and runoff. And of course, that it's a naturally occurring organism. But it's the potential to blow those up, to add essentially the rocket fuel that would feed those blooms and make them worse than they should be. That's the key.
Well, thanks for that explanation. And certainly as Lee County and the city of Sanibel are all looking at phased beach reopenings, I'm sure red tide and the outlook for that is going to play a major factor in getting those beaches back opened. Certainly as the Visitor and Convention Bureau, we're very transparent with visitors. We share with them what our beach conditions are and encourage folks to check normally if they're staying in a coastal area, to check with their accommodations as to the red tide situation nearest to them. But we'll hope for the best. As our community is going through recovery, certainly what we had take place in 2018 is, as you said, not going to help matters much. I have one more question for you, James. We're getting a lot of questions at the Bureau also about voluntourism opportunities. I know you mentioned maybe people stepping forward to provide some more nesting platforms. But how can our residents and our community and visitors get involved in our recovery efforts?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Great question. We've had a huge number of people that have reached out to us to find out how they can help the community recover. And we have a program called Coastal Watch, which is headed up by one of our program directors, Keely McNeil. And she's been putting together volunteer programs so that we can get people out to our coastal, our coastal areas, to our beaches, working very closely with the city of Sanibel, getting volunteers out there to pick up debris that is on the beach, going out to our preserves and removing debris and trying to clean up the preserves to get those open so that people can start to enjoy, the good nature that exists here in Lee County and on our barrier islands. And we're, trying to come up with new opportunities, every day, because, there's really a need. And I know Keep Lee County Beautiful is working really hard to try and provide opportunities for volunteers to clean up. And yeah, I think it's going to be really important. A lot of people are coming from all over the country to come down here and try to support our recovery. So I think, we need to continue to provide those opportunities. We usually fill up almost immediately. As soon as we put out a call, for 20 to 40 volunteers each event, we've had upwards of 60, but we have to keep those manageable because we only have so many vehicles. In fact, we lost most of our vehicles during the storm because of flooding and storm surge. So we only have one, 16-passenger vehicle to haul people around, and that's been a little challenging. But we could certainly use more volunteers to help us, clean up our, beaches. If there are other needs, whether it's on Fort Myers Beach or in Pine Island, if the community has needs, please reach out to us at secf.org, and we can get you in contact with Keely and try to organize a cleanup in your area as well. I mean, it's all about bringing the community together to realize the impacts and be able to participate in bringing the community up as one. I think that's the key.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for that, James. And not only our community, we have visitors who have been, coming here for 10, 15, 20 years that have like this lifelong relationship with our destination that, they want to roll their sleeves up and be part of the recovery process. So the VCB is certainly glad to share that information with our visitors and make those opportunities available. Again, it's at your website, correct? Is it sccf.org?
That's correct. Sccf.org, exactly. And And Brian, one last thing I just want to mention. So those of you that aren't tracking, you know, the water quality conditions, you know, as closely as we are, I would strongly recommend that, you know, get your members to log on and try to sign up for those weekly Coosatchee conditions reports, as well as our water conditions tracker. The water conditions tracker is really geared towards more of a lay audience to update them on the water conditions. But we're going to need everybody speaking up with one voice with the Army Corps of Engineers and the South Florida Management District to ensure that we're not the path of least resistance if they decide to make releases this spring. So I just, if you could, you know, stay informed, make sure your members are informed, and have them sign up for those documents, because I think it'll keep you in the loop. And when we're ready to put out an action alert, we'll put that out, and we can make sure everybody participates.
Thanks for that, James, and thanks again for such a thorough update for everyone this morning. We do really, really appreciate it. Let's open it up and see if anybody on the line has any questions for you. If anybody has any questions for James, just hit *2 on your phone and go ahead and ask your question.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah.
Good morning. This is Sandra. I'm at the Western Cape Coral Resort. James, what an amazing overview. I was just all over my phone listening to you. I wish I was more involved, but you definitely piqued my interest and curiosity to get more involved. And just a very simple question. You know, you were talking about the animals, you know, opossums and bobcats and armadillos, and that, you know, some of them or most of them haven't returned yet. I'm just curious. So did they get washed away, and how are they going to find their way back?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. We don't know. You know, of course, we don't tag any of our armadillos or possum. They're very common species out here on the islands. And, you know, many of the species we do tag, we're able to track them pretty well. But we don't know. You know, of course, some of these species can swim. But, you know, we're very surprised that we have not been able to find, you know, species like armadillos and opossum and our coach whip, which is a pretty rare snake within our dune system. They're gone, and we don't know, you know, if they're going to come back or if they're there and we're just not finding them. But our biologists are out there, out and about every day, monitoring the different ecosystems. And so far, we've not been able to find them. So we'll see what happens.
I hope they find their way back home.
Yeah, we hope so as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that question. Does anybody else have a question for James?
Yes, this is Anissa Kareem from the Rendell Research Center. I do have a question.
Good morning, Anissa.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Good morning.
Okay, awesome. So James, thank you for that informative update. It really helped me kind of get a big picture of what's happening here now, almost 5 months after the storm. You mentioned the reports that you have, the Red Tide weekly reports that you have. A couple of questions. One, how do I get signed up for that? And two, is there a way on your website or through a source that you know of to track trends of red tides and localities, like how often it hits Pineland versus Boquilla versus St. James City? Do you know of anything like that?
Yeah, great question. So yes, you can go to sccf.org, and right on the front page, you can sign up for our action alerts, and you can sign up for the Coosatchee conditions reports and our water quality tracker right there. So it should be pretty easy. And if you can't find it there and you're having difficulty, I know it's there, but you can email me at james.evans@sccf.org, and I can walk you through and provide you access to whatever you need. In regards to your second question, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, the state that's state agency that's responsible for tracking red tide, they actually have a wonderful website. If you just go to Google and type in FWC red tide, it's going to take you to their red tide tracking webpage, and you can look at the daily reports. You know, when they, you know, the data that I was reporting to you today on the red tide, which is, you know, between moderate and high concentrations, that data was from the 21st of February, so just a couple of days ago. But you can go in there and you can You can go back in history, very far back. In fact, they have some charts that will show you the frequency and duration of red tides going back, you know, they go back to the, you know, when we first reported red tide in Florida. But they actually have a site where you can actually look at the data points on a map, which I think are extremely helpful, every day that they sample. And so, and they actually have them consolidated by month. So if you wanted to figure out what was going on in February of 2021 and compare that to February of 2022, you could do that. And it shows all the dots on the map of where they sampled. So you can look at trends over time, which I think is really helpful. We use that a lot for our presentations on water quality.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Another great question and another great answer. Thank you, James. Sure. We're on a roll. Anyone else have a question for James? Well, James, thanks very much again for such a thorough presentation this morning. We really appreciate the information. And again, anybody has any questions or follow up with James, please go to fccf.org or reach out to the Visitor and Convention Bureau, and we'll be glad to put you in touch with him.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. Appreciate your time. I'll go ahead and provide a quick VCB update. As I hope everybody knows, spring training opens this weekend. The Red Sox have a game against Northeastern, I believe, tomorrow, and then it's the Twins and the Tampa Bay Rays on Saturday, and we're off and running with spring training. I mentioned earlier Commissioner Hammond unable to join us this morning because as we speak, Fox Weather is interviewing Commissioner Hammond about spring training with assistance from our communications team. Another couple of tidbits on the PR side. We have a reporter from the UK Sun and a reporter from the Orlando Sentinel, both coming to town this Sunday and Monday to take a look at our recovery and to start sharing some good positive news about the progress that our destination is making. From the sales team, listen to this. The sales team has sourced 312 RFPs to our hotel partners this fiscal year to date. That is 136% of where we are, or where we were rather, in FY19 pre-COVID levels. So the sales team is doing a fantastic job. From those RFPs, our partners have booked 56 meetings. The sales staff will be on a Florida show tour hitting Tampa, Orlando, and Melbourne coming up here in just another week or so. Looking forward to ITB in Berlin, March 7th through the 9th, and then a big Visit Florida Canada sales mission coming up in late March. From the marketing side, I've shared with you that our My Fort Myers recovery campaign has been up and running just about for a month now. We did create a new landing page at leevcb.com, so if you want to hop over there and take a look at some of the creative assets that we're using for that campaign, please do so. We'll do our best to try to keep that updated as new creative assets continue to come out. Here's some big fun news. We have finally launched our Visit Fort Myers TikTok channel. So if you're on TikTok, please follow us. We are just under a month in, and we would love to have as many partners on there following us as possible. Recently, the marketing team introduced the Cape Coral Quest. This is a gamified scavenger hunt that was created in collaboration with the city of Cape Coral. It gives visitors and residents a fun way to explore the city and to earn points redeemable for prizes. I believe the grand prize is a stay at the Westin Cape Coral Resort. As we approach spring into summer, our partner co-op opportunities are live. So you may want to log into the co-op portal to take a look. We have some good opportunities in there, including a dedicated strategy for in-state efforts. If you have any trouble logging in or if you've forgotten your credentials, please reach out to me and I'll put you in touch with Josh Lambert at MMGY, who runs that program on our behalf. And always a reminder, if you haven't done so, please log in and update your business listing at visitfortmyers.com so we can make sure that you're live and visible for all the new traffic that we're getting. So I'm going to wrap things up with some numbers here. From December to January, according to TripAdvisor, we've seen a 200% increase in hotel demand. And so That tells me that obviously we're moving in the right direction since turning our marketing back on in January. The average lead time for hotel bookings was 56.1 days, pretty consistent with where we were in January of 2022. Overall, we had about just over 60% increase in our website page views and our web traffic, January versus December, month over month. And that, again, is mainly due to the marketing kicking back in for January. Our top out-of-state markets, Chicago, New York City, Minneapolis, and Detroit. And while we did see an 18% decrease in the total number of visitors for January when compared to last January, hotel ADR increased by 12%, RevPAR was up 14.4%. And probably the biggest news that I have to share this morning is that as of this past Monday, February 20th, just a few days ago, our percentage of open hotel rooms in Lee County is now sitting at 68.4%, a total of 9,801 open guest rooms. So slowly but surely, we are getting there. So that's the report that I had out of the VCB for everyone this morning. If anybody has any questions for Dana or James or myself, please hit *2 on your phone, and we're glad to answer any questions that you might have or hear any updates about your property, how your booking trends are looking for peak season, anything you'd like to share.
Hi, this is Katya from the Pink Shell. I just wanted to announced that we did start taking transient reservations yesterday. Obviously, we have very limited amenities, but our rooms that are open are all brand new. We were in the middle of a renovation when the hurricane hit, so the towers or the buildings that are open are all renovated. We're hoping to get our main pool online within the next 30 to 45 days. But we decided to open it up for transient yesterday, and we've, gotten a ton of phone calls and about 50 bookings. So that's a really good start. People are just really excited to be able to come back and stay on the beach.
Katya, congratulations for that. I know that you and entire team over there has been working pretty hard at getting the property ready, and that's great, great news.
Yeah.
That's great news.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else have any questions or any news they'd like to share? Well, all right. Thanks for sticking with us this morning. This was a little bit of a longer call, but fantastic information shared. Thank you, Dana, for joining us, and James. And again, if anybody has any follow-up for those gentlemen or for the VCB, please reach out and we'll put you in touch with them. Our next call will be a week from today on Thursday, March 2nd, the same number and same time at 9 a.m. Everybody have a good rest of your week and a fantastic weekend, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.